Redditors who had a dying confession but then lived. What happened? Story 1. I used to work on construction with this guy. Let's call him Larry. One day on site, there was this big mess with a scaffolding rig. A vehicle accidentally backed into it while Larry was working underneath, and the whole thing collapsed on top of him. It looked really bad at the moment. He was pinned, bleeding from a head wound, and said he couldn't feel his legs. He was absolutely convinced this was the end for him. While a few of us were trying to lift the scaffold and give him basic first aid, Larry kept asking for someone's phone so he could call his wife, Susie. Our supervisor handed one over, and Larry, believing these were his final moments, poured his heart out over the phone in the most dramatic, "This is it" way you could imagine. While fully sobbing, he told Susie he hadn't been the husband he should have been. He confessed to having multiple affairs, stealing from Susie's parents, creeping on their neighbor's daughter, and doing drugs with Susie's sister. He was apologizing and asking for forgiveness, thinking this would be the last time they'd speak. Well, turns out, Larry wasn't dying at all. Once the scaffold was lifted, it turned out he'd only been pinned by a few awkwardly fallen tubes and bracers. They'd landed in just the wrong way to put pressure on a nerve, which made his legs go numb. His head injury only needed a handful of stitches, and outside of some bruises, he walked away in way better shape than we all expected. Susie didn't exactly appreciate the unexpected honesty. By the time he got out of the hospital, he had lost his house, his truck, custody of his kids, and ended up with a pretty hefty monthly child support and alimony situation. To top it all off, he got officially written up at work for not wearing his hard hat under the scaffolding, which was company policy. A while later, I talked to another guy who was working with Larry that day. Apparently, the whole incident started because a forklift picked up one of the storage carts for the scaffold pieces, but it hadn't been properly secured, which was Larry's responsibility. Before we continue, do us a quick favor. Smash that like button and subscribe to support our channel. Story 2. I was in a pretty bad accident a while ago that left me with a concussion and a spinal injury that needed emergency surgery. By the time I got to the hospital, things were moving fast. The surgeon came in and gave me the standard rundown of risks, but my concussion brain completely latched onto one line. There's a very small chance of death. And suddenly, I was convinced I wasn't making it out of that operating room. In that weird mix of panic and clarity that only comes when you're concussed and think you're about to die, I had one super specific regret hit me hard. I didn't tell my brother I loved him enough. So with my phone barely hanging on at like 2% battery, I called him up. I told him I was proud of him, that he should move on, live life to the fullest, and basically gave him the emotional version of a farewell letter in under a minute. Anyway, the surgery went great. Zero complications. I woke up groggy but very much alive and almost immediately saw my brother. Without missing a beat, he smirked and said, "So just because you survived doesn't mean I can't still live my life to the fullest, right?" It wasn't an either slash or situation. I obviously told him he couldn't. Story 3. So, this happened during that inland hurricane we had last year. The winds were insane, trees were snapping, debris was flying around, and I was huddled in the hallway of our house just waiting for the roof to rip off. Genuinely thought the whole place was going to come down. I remember sitting there, heart pounding, thinking, "Yep, this is it. This is how I go." At the time, my roommate, whom I'd had a bit of a complicated friendship/flirtation situation with, was at work. And in that moment of total panic and existential dread, I figured if I was about to die, I didn't want to go without saying something real. So I pulled out my phone and sent her a text that said something like, "Hey, so I might actually die in this storm. Just wanted to say I love you. Too much to risk not saying it. If I somehow survive, see you tonight. If I don't, sorry for the levity." Well, the house ended up being almost completely fine, 95% unscathed. Lost a couple of shingles, a tree branch dented the gutter, but that was about it. When she got home from work, she was smiling from ear to ear. She'd been feeling the same way for a while. Said my apocalyptic panic text kind of cleared the air. We decided to give it a shot, and actually dated for a while after that. We're not together anymore, but it ended on good terms. I'd give the whole experience a solid 7 out of 10. Would confess my feelings during a near-death situation again, if necessary. Story 4. When I was 15, I tore my ACL playing softball and needed knee surgery. It was a routine procedure, but teenage me didn't see it that way. Once they gave me the anesthesia and I was good and loopy, My brain suddenly decided this was it, my final moment on Earth. I became completely convinced I wasn't going to make it off that operating table. As they were wheeling me down the hall toward the ore, I sat up, or tried to at least, and dramatically shouted at a completely random orderly, "Tell my family I want to be an organ donor." I have zero memory of this whatsoever, but my mom was standing nearby and witnessed the whole thing. She still brings it up whenever the topic of hospitals or organ donation comes up. We still laugh about it. Now, at the time, I didn't fully understand how organ donation actually worked. I had this vague idea from TV and health class that organ donors were walking around just one emergency away from being whisked away to donate a kidney to a stranger. It honestly freaked me out a bit. I thought it meant someone could just ask for a piece of you and you'd have to hand it over. Eventually, I realized that's not how it works at all. You're not getting harvested just because you're on a list. It's about helping others if and when you truly can't be helped anymore. So, I educated myself, got over the weird fear, and signed up to be a donor like I'd always wanted to. Funny enough, I had a roommate years later who gave me grief about it. He argued that, "You're going to be so mad when they bring you back to life in the future and you don't have your eyes." Like we'd reach a point in human history where full-on resurrection is on the table, but eyeballs are the one thing science can't replicate, and out of all the people in the world, I'm the lucky one they bring back. Still blind though, because I checked a box at the DMV. The logic was wild. Anyway, I'm 37 now and still an organ donor. And thankfully, still in possession of both eyes for now. Story 5. My dad was recently diagnosed with cancer, and after his initial surgery to remove the tumors, he was in a rough spot, weak, in a lot of pain, and for the first time in his life, not in control. That was a scary realization for him. Now, let me give some background. My dad has always been kind of selfish. The type of guy who really only puts effort into things if there's something in it for him, or if it's convenient. My brother and I were raised mostly by our mom, and later on by our amazing stepdad, who's still a solid part of our lives to this day. Growing up, my dad would always make it clear that we weren't getting any kind of inheritance. He planned to spend everything before he died. He's been a bachelor for 30-plus years, no spouse, and he'd repeat that, "No one's getting anything when I go," like it was a badge of honor. My brother and I always just shrugged it off. It's his money, after all, and saying we didn't care was our way of not letting it hang over us. So, cut to him lying in a hospital bed, genuinely thinking he might be on his way out. He has this emotional breakthrough and calls us both, saying he's changed his perspective. Says he doesn't have to be in a pine box to start giving and wants to gift us each some money, while he's still around to see us enjoy it. We were surprised but touched. It felt like a big shift for him. There were some strings attached, of course. He wanted to approve what we used the money for. Fair enough. My brother talked about putting in a new pool. I brought up replacing floors and windows, which are things I actually need but haven't been able to afford. Dad approved both ideas and even seemed excited about them. He never gave us an exact number, but the way he talked, it sounded like these would be significant gifts. A couple of weeks later, the test results come back, and it turns out his cancer is very treatable and was caught early. We were relieved. Both my brother and I had flown out to be with him, help take care of him, and support him through chemo. Then one day, he sits us down and says, "Now that I'm not dying, there are still a lot of things I want to do, so I'm not giving you guys the money after all." If you knew the man, you'd know this whole thing was very on brand. Still, I won't lie, it stung. We didn't expect anything, but having the rug pulled after it was offered like some grand gesture was rough. Story 6. My dad and mom divorced when I was really young, like 2 or 3. And while we were technically in contact, it was never a father-daughter relationship. He was more like an old acquaintance I saw from time to time. He didn't parent me. We'd grab lunch every now and then, maybe a drink if we happened to be in the same town, but it was always surface level. Over time, I started to realize just how invisible I was in his life. Once, not long before the pandemic, I ran into him at a pub. I walked up and said hi, just casually trying to make conversation. One of his friends came over and asked how I knew him, and when I said, "Oh, I'm his daughter," the look on his face was pure shock. That was the moment it really sank in. My dad didn't talk about me. Probably never mentioned me at all. When he passed, it got even more surreal. His funeral was across the country, and my sisters and I went, even though we weren't close to him. We spent the day being asked if we were co-workers. Not a single person there, people who had known him for decades, had any idea he'd even been married, let alone had three daughters. It wasn't even angering at that point. Just hollow. We weren't in his will, because there wasn't one. But we did end up finding out he had savings bonds, apparently all in my sister's name. She mailed out our shares later on, along with photocopies and receipts. My cut came out to just under $30. It's not about the money. It never was. It was just the final proof that we were never really part of his story. The worst part, honestly, was watching some of his friends react. You could see how blindsided they were. They felt awful, like they'd missed something huge about someone they thought they really knew. And weirdly, I felt worse for them than I did for myself. He spent his whole life keeping us out of the picture. I guess that part never changed, even in death. Story 7. I actually witnessed one of these firsthand. A few years ago, my husband and I were driving behind his uncle when he got into a pretty bad car accident. We were the first to reach him. His car was mangled, there was a lot of blood, and he couldn't feel anything except his head. He thought he was dying. While we waited for the ambulance, he started saying what honestly sounded like his final words. He asked us to tell his wife that he loved her deeply, and that he was sorry he hadn't always treated her the way she deserved. He called her the love of his life and admitted that when they first got together, it was because he fantasized something about her and not out of love. He'd been initially drawn to her for some shallow, physical reasons. But over the years, he realized she was so much more than what had attracted him at first. She was kind, patient, resilient, and the best thing that had ever happened to him. He said she deserved to be loved wholly, and if she ever found someone new after he was gone, he hoped she'd never settle for less than she was worth. It was an emotional moment. He was barely conscious, clearly in pain, and genuinely believed those were his last moments. The ambulance arrived soon after and rushed him to the hospital. Turned out the injuries looked worse than they were at first glance. He had some surface wounds, but the real damage was to his back. He'd fractured parts of his vertebrae, specifically the small bony protrusions called transverse processes, but the spinal cord itself hadn't been seriously compromised. The numbness was from swelling and trauma. He needed a few surgeries and a long recovery period, but he made it. A few days later, we shared a toned-down version of what he'd said with his wife. She got emotional, of course, but took it with grace. Honestly, though, it was a bit awkward for us. We'd always looked up to him, and hearing that his marriage had started on such shallow terms was surprising, to say the least. Funny enough, they're still together and stronger than ever now. I think the whole incident made them both re-evaluate their relationship and appreciate each other more. Story 8. This isn't exactly the dramatic life-or-death confession you might expect, but it's my story. A while back, I was in a pretty serious car accident. I ended up breaking my neck and had a nasty injury where a piece of metal went deep into my thigh, causing a lot of bleeding. At one point, I honestly thought I was going to die because I was losing so much blood. While I was still conscious and in pain, I called my girlfriend at the time. I wanted to tell her something important, something I'd been saving up for. For months, I'd been putting away money, about $5,000, with the plan to surprise her with a down payment on a new car. My goal was to put down $10,000 total so that her monthly payments would be really manageable, under $200. But in that moment, thinking I might not make it, I told her I wanted her to have the $5,000 I'd saved, and asked her not to tell my family about it. I passed out on the phone with her after that, and when I woke up in the hospital, she was right there beside me. She asked me what the money was for, and I told her the plan. That's when she started laughing. Turns out, she'd been secretly saving too. She'd saved $7,000 toward the same goal. 2 weeks later, once I was able to walk again, we took all the money we had, $12,000, and went to buy her car. Then we went to my mom's house in Florida, so I could recover more comfortably. Story 9. Not me, but my old boss's brother. He works in bomb disposal, specifically the kind of high-stakes stuff involving landmines and chemical weapons. One day, he and his team were working in a secure facility on a device that contained some sort of nerve agent. While inside the containment room, one of the team members accidentally dropped the device. Alarms went off, lockdown protocols kicked in, and the three people inside were told to prepare for the worst. Basically, they were advised to call their families and say their goodbyes. It was that serious. He tried calling my boss, his brother, multiple times to say goodbye, but my boss kept ignoring the call, assuming it was something casual or unimportant. Meanwhile, in the locked room, the situation got even tenser. The device wasn't detonated, but no one wanted to risk another move. So my boss's brother stepped up and volunteered to finish disarming the bomb. His logic was, if this thing's going to go off, I'd rather it be quick than die slowly from whatever it's packed with. Miraculously, he succeeded. Disarmed the whole thing, no casualties, no detonation. Now, every time his brother's phone rings, he always picks up, no matter what. Story 10. This didn't happen to me directly, but to a close friend, and I was there when it happened. 2 days before my friend's mom passed away, she sat us down and out of nowhere, admitted to killing my friend's dad many years ago. She said she found out he had been essaying a disabled neighbor's child, and after that, she couldn't live with letting it go unpunished. So, she claimed she started feeding him rat poison. Now what's wild is that no one ever suspected her. Everyone thought he just came down with some mysterious illness. He was in the hospital for about a month before he died, so we asked her, "Wait, but he was in the hospital for weeks, wouldn't they have figured it out?" She just looked at us and said, "That's why I told him not to eat that horrible hospital food. I brought him food myself every day." We were all just stunned. No idea if it was true or if she was just saying something wild at the end. But she passed 2 days later, and no one ever brought it up again. Whether it was a real confession or something her mind created near the end, I honestly don't know, but it's stuck with all of us ever since. Story 11. This one came from my great-grandmother, and she was in her final days, completely out of it on pain meds, and started having conversations with people who weren't there. At one point, she began talking to me, but called me Deb, which is my aunt's name. So she thought I was someone else entirely. And then she just casually said her youngest nephew wasn't actually her nephew, he was her great-nephew. The woman he believed to be his oldest sister was actually his biological mother. I didn't say a word about it at the time. Just let it slide and keep my mouth shut. Honestly, I wasn't even sure if it was just the meds talking. Fast forward about 2 years. Her sister passed away, and in the fallout, the truth came out from the niece, who was actually the guy's mom. She finally admitted it to him, and it tore the family apart. Huge fallout. People stopped speaking to each other, old wounds reopened, and it turned into full-blown family warfare. So yeah, she wasn't just rambling. That confession was very real. Story 12. I was stationed in Hawaii when that infamous ballistic missile alert came through, the one that said, "This is not a drill." For a few long, horrifying minutes, we all thought it was real. At first, there was this eerie calm. I had just been sipping my coffee and scrolling through Warhammer subreddits, enjoying a lazy Saturday morning. Then my phone lit up with that alert. My brain did a hard switch from weekend mode to we might all die in the next 20 minutes. I immediately called my wife. She was working up on the North Shore at the time, a solid distance away from where we lived on base, so there was no realistic way to reach each other in time. I gave her a rundown of what to do immediately: get to shelter, avoid windows, stay underground if she could, and told her to call her family. Then I called my parents, who live on the East Coast. I told them not to panic, that I loved them, and that no matter what happened, they'd always meant the world to me. But I also told them I had to hang up. Rachel, my wife, was out there alone, and I needed to make sure she was okay. I called her back. She was trying to keep it together, but I could hear the fear in her voice. I just talked to her, told her how much I loved her, reminded her of the best moments we'd had together, tried to keep her grounded. I didn't know what else to do, so I just stayed on the line while sipping rum straight from the bottle. It felt like we were either minutes away from death, or about to be launched into war. Either way, everything was about to change. But nothing happened. No impact. No shockwave. Eventually, we found out someone had hit the wrong button. It was all just a mistake. A very public, very terrifying mistake. It was a huge relief, of course. Nervous laughter. Some anger. But oddly, it also brought us all closer. What messed with me most was how normal everything had felt just moments before. 1 second, I was enjoying a quiet morning. Next, I was trying to soothe my wife through what we thought were our final moments and prepping to head to war. We joke about it now. Between surviving 2012, the Great Recession, that missile crisis, and a global pandemic, it kind of feels like we've been running through a cursed timeline. But hey, we're still here. Story 13. When I was younger, my grandfather, on my dad's side, fell seriously ill and was hospitalized with what turned out to be tuberculosis. At the time, things were tense in our family. My grandfather had always been a very strict, traditional man. He had strong ideas about how people should live their lives, and he pushed those expectations hard on both my dad and, to a lesser extent, me. It created a lot of resentment over the years, especially between him and my father. Anyway, there was a moment in the hospital when he genuinely thought he was dying. He pulled my dad aside and, for the first time in his life, opened up. He told him, "I'm sorry for being a terrible father to you, my son. I pushed too hard, forced my beliefs on you and your boy, and I know you both resented me for it. I was too strict, and I see that now. Maybe this illness is karma, or maybe it's a wake-up call, but let it be a lesson to both of us. I love you." It hit my dad pretty hard. He wasn't the kind of man to cry or show emotion much, but I could tell those words meant something. For years, he'd carried that emotional weight, and finally hearing his dad admit fault brought him some closure. Surprisingly, a few weeks later, my grandfather's health unexpectedly improved. The TB was treated successfully, and he fully recovered. Sometime after he got better, I asked him if he meant what he'd said back in the hospital. He paused for a second, then nodded and said, "Yes, I meant it all. I was wrong, and I'm doing my best now to live better." He eventually moved out of the city and settled in a quiet, rural area where he spent the rest of his life in peace, gardening, reading, and enjoying nature. He mellowed out so much. The man who once lectured and criticized us constantly became someone who listened more, smiled more, and seemed genuinely at peace with himself. For a bit more context, my parents were teen parents. They were young in love and trying to figure things out. My dad worked himself to the bone trying to provide, and sadly, he passed away from overworking. My mom eventually remarried, but her new husband was nothing like my dad. He was egotistical and harsh, the kind of person who never tried to understand our family's past. But despite all that, I still think about that moment in the hospital between my dad and grandpa. It didn't undo the years of tension, but it was something real. And in the end, I'm glad my grandfather lived long enough to reflect, change, and leave this world with some peace in his heart. Story 14. When I was deployed in Iraq, Balad, 2004 to 2005, I was part of a small team that operated on base, but I wasn't really part of a specific unit. That meant I spent a lot of my off-duty hours alone, and looking back, being isolated like that in a war zone didn't do great things for my mental state. I even had a massive 20-plus person tent all to myself, which made the place feel even more hollow. Rocket and mortar attacks were pretty common on the base. The enemy would set up makeshift launchers, basically roof gutters buried in the dirt, and attach a timed fuse before disappearing. Hours later, the mortars would hit, usually in volleys of three. Most of the time, they were wildly inaccurate. But not always. One airman lost both his hands and legs to an attack, so the danger was real even if the hits were rare. One night, I was alone in my tent, just killing time, probably reading or playing video games, when the loudest explosion I'd ever heard went off. I didn't even hear it as much as I felt it. The blast hit hard and close. Then, moments later, a second mortar landed even closer. I heard debris and dirt pepper the outside of my tent. That was the moment my body froze. I knew these attacks usually came in threes, and the third could land anywhere, including right on me. So, in the few seconds I thought I had left, my brain did what I guess a lot of people's brains do when they think the end is coming, and I made peace with it. I mentally reached out to whatever higher power might be out there. I remember thinking something along the lines of, "If you're there, now's a good time to show up." I even made a wild promise in my head. If I survive this, I'll become a priest. It was the most genuine moment of desperation I've ever had. The third explosion never came. Minutes passed, and then hours, and that was it. The attack was over. I survived. Obviously, I didn't become a priest, but that moment changed me. It's strange. I think I might still carry some form of PTSD from that night, but not in a typical way. I'm not haunted by vivid flashbacks or anything, but it definitely shifted my perspective. I've found that the big existential stuff doesn't faze me anymore. I don't get wrapped up in fear about death or what's beyond this life. I've made my peace with those questions. But ironically, I have less patience for the small day-to-day annoyances. My wife and kids would probably say I can be irritable at times, and they wouldn't be wrong. I still think about that night sometimes. Not because of the fear, but because it's the clearest memory I have of feeling totally at the mercy of something bigger than myself. And somehow, I walked away from it with a kind of peace I didn't expect to find. Story 15. I guess mine's a little different. My confessions and near-death experiences never happened at the same time, but they've shaped each other in weird ways. I've written several letters in dark moments of my life, kind of like goodbye notes, always thinking it might be the end. But ironically, writing those letters actually helps me not go through with anything. I get so caught up in explaining every little detail, why I felt the way I did, and trying to absolve others of guilt, that by the end of it, I've processed so much that I no longer feel like I'm in crisis. It's happened at least 5 times. Writing became both my warning sign and my therapy. On the flip side, I've made plenty of love confessions to people over the years, driven by this constant feeling that life is short and unpredictable. Like, why leave things unsaid when we could die tomorrow? Unfortunately, those confessions never quite landed. Either I was too late, or they ghosted me, or they were already dating someone. But I still don't regret saying it. I'd rather be honest and risk rejection than let silence turn into regret. As for near-death stuff, yeah, I've had a few moments. I almost choked to death on a peppermint when I was 8, legit thought that was it. Got threatened by a roommate who snapped during a hotel stay on a band trip and pulled a knife on me. A couple of years later, I ended up in the hospital post-wisdom tooth surgery because the bleeding wouldn't stop. Turns out, the painkillers I was given didn't play nice with my mild clotting issue. What was supposed to be routine turned into a few days of real worry. And then there's just the everyday chaos. I've had too many close calls on the road thanks to reckless drivers weaving through traffic at 100+ mph on highways. It's made me a ridiculously alert driver, but it also fuels that same say-what-you-need-to-say mentality. I guess all those brushes with danger have reinforced my belief that anything can happen at any time. Story 16. We had bought a piece of land out in the woods and figured we might as well put it to use by cutting down some trees for firewood. It was just a casual day of working outdoors, nothing out of the ordinary, but things took a dark turn after one point. We were taking down what we thought would be the last tree of the day. We cut it clean, but when it fell, it hit another tree. That second tree wobbled and toppled into a third one, which ended up crashing straight down on my coworker. Total domino effect. It sounds fake, but I swear it actually happened. By some freak stroke of luck, the tree didn't land completely flush with the ground. It was slightly elevated by a stump or maybe the terrain underneath, so it wasn't crushing him entirely. Still, it was bad. The guy was pinned and in serious pain. There were a couple of us there, and we immediately rushed to help. While we were scrambling to move the tree, he looked up at us and said he needed his phone so he could call his wife. He just wanted to tell her he loved her and say his goodbyes. He genuinely thought he was going to die right there in the woods. We managed to roll the tree off after a few minutes of sheer panic and effort. Paramedics came pretty quickly after we called, and it turned out he had 4 broken ribs, but nothing life-threatening. Definitely a close call, though. He made a full recovery, but I think that moment really shook him. We all walked away a little quieter and way more respectful of how unpredictable nature and gravity can be. Story 17. This happened to me a couple of years ago, and I still think about it often. I was in a really dark place mentally, overwhelmed with anxiety and self-doubt. I had been dating this guy for almost 2 years, but throughout our relationship, I kept having this sinking feeling that he was being unfaithful. He always insisted I was just being paranoid, that I was imagining things, and that I needed to stop being so insecure. Over time, I started to believe him. I began to think I was the problem. During that December, things hit a breaking point. I truly believed I couldn't take it anymore and made an attempt on my life. Before I did, I called him and poured my heart out. I told him I finally believed him, that I was sorry for being suspicious and accusing him of cheating, especially with his only female friend, whom I had always felt uneasy about. I apologized for being, in my mind, a terrible girlfriend. I took all the blame. I thought it was the last thing I'd ever say to him. But I survived. I ended up waking up and somehow still made it to school the next day because I had midterms. No one around me had any idea what had just happened. I was emotionally wrecked and physically drained, but I showed up like nothing happened. And then he ghosted me. 2 full days of complete silence. After almost 2 years together, he didn't say a word. When he finally did reach out, it was just to break up with me. Shortly after, I found out the truth that he had been cheating. Everything I'd felt for months was right, but he had manipulated me into thinking I was just crazy and insecure. Gaslighting at its finest. Looking back, the part that stings the most isn't even the cheating, it's the fact that I apologized to him. That in what I thought were my final moments, I spent my last energy trying to make him feel okay. I regret that deeply. But if there's a silver lining, it's that I made it. I've done a lot of growing since then. Story 18. A few years ago, I went backpacking with my brother and dad on a trail my dad had dreamed about hiking for years. He'd been reading guidebooks and planning the route for nearly 12 months, so this trip meant a lot to him. The plan was to hike for a week, but from day one, it was clear my dad was struggling physically. My brother, who's in great shape, would hike ahead with me for a bit, drop his pack, and then run back to help dad by carrying his load too. Meanwhile, I'd slowly make progress with my pack and my brother's pack while they caught up. Not the smoothest system, but we were making it work. I pushed hard to make sure we spent at least one night on the trail, since I knew how important it was for our dad to experience it. As the day went on, I found myself hiking alone, trying to get us to the designated overnight shelter before dark. That's when things got intense. I was alone, tired, and a little on edge when the bushes just off the trail started shaking violently. I froze. My first thought was bear. The adrenaline hit hard. I slowly backed away, trying not to make any sudden moves. I made it back to the place where we'd left my brother's pack, and, thinking I might be in real danger, I sat down and wrote a note to my wife and kids. I told them I loved them and added a line, "Don't be as stubborn as me." Then, just in case, I pulled my driver's license out and stuck it in my pants pocket, figuring if something happened, at least they'd be able to identify me. With no cell signal and panic setting in, I decided to try and find my brother and dad, safety in numbers, right? But as I was hiking back, I ran into another hiker headed toward the shelter. Just seeing another person calmed me down a little. I figured, if there really is a bear, at least he'll spot it first. So, I turned around and went back toward the shelter with him. Turns out that was the right call. I managed to get the tent set up and everything ready by the time my brother and dad showed up at dusk. When I told them what happened, my brother shrugged and said it was probably just a deer, but there were multiple signs posted around the shelter warning about an aggressive black bear in the area, so I'm not sure. Bear or deer, I have never felt that kind of fear before. I honestly thought I was done for. I know now that black bears rarely attack, and I probably wasn't in actual danger, but in that moment, I was fully convinced my life was on the line. My heart still races when I think about it. The next day, thankfully, the trail was mostly downhill, and we hiked out as a group. The trip didn't go as planned, but we all made it out safe and ended up with some unforgettable stories. Story 19. This isn't my own dying confession, but it involves my biological dad, so I thought I'd share. Some background. My parents split when I was just 2 years old. I stayed with my mom, who later remarried and moved to Australia. I didn't meet my biological dad until I was 16, so he was pretty much a stranger to me. Fast forward to my mid-20s, a few years ago, I found out through my mom that he had been diagnosed with cancer and given only about 3 months to live, but he fought hard against it. When he was on his deathbed, he made a confession to his three daughters from another relationship. He told them about me, that he had kept me a secret all these years, and gave them instructions on how to get in touch with me. Miraculously, he recovered and has now been cancer-free for 6 years. The weird part is, none of those sisters ever reached out to me. Honestly, even though he's my biological dad, he's still basically a stranger. My stepdad is the one who raised me and has always been my real dad, so I'm okay with not having contact with those sisters. It's a strange situation, but it didn't really change much in my life. Story 20. Back in 2019, I hit an absolute breaking point. Within just a few months, I lost my remaining family members and my dog, all in quick succession. It crushed me so deeply that I completely stopped taking care of myself. I got severely dehydrated, developed chest and throat infections, and my immune system basically collapsed. My boyfriend was my rock through it all. He helped me start eating and drinking again, and I even had to go to the hospital for an 4-drip to rehydrate, plus a heavy course of antibiotics. During this time, I felt like I couldn't breathe properly. I was crying every day, convinced that this was the end for me. Facing that near-death experience made me realize something important. I hadn't truly told the people I cared about how much they meant to me. So I reached out, telling my friends, my boyfriend, and even talking to my pets. I even went to my uncle's grave and finally patched up a bunch of broken relationships I'd neglected or lost over the years. I didn't die, of course, and eventually I got better. But that brush with death pushed me to fix my life in a way I never expected. Now, everyone important to me knows how I feel. I saved some friendships I thought were gone forever, and I'm even closer to my pets. It's kind of crazy, but thinking I was going to die was what finally made me heal and mend those broken bridges. Story 21. So, mine wasn't a dramatic car crash or life-threatening illness. It was a hash brownie that nearly made me spill my soul. I had one at a friend's place, thinking it'd be a chill time, but it hit me so wrong. My blood pressure tanked, I couldn't breathe properly, and I genuinely thought, yep, this is how I go. I texted the guy who gave it to me something along the lines of, I'm very intoxicated, I might die today. As soon as I sent it, I kind of shocked myself. Like if I'm sending that kind of message, I must really not be okay. So, I ran to my mom for help. Yep, that desperate. She basically went into full-on panic mode, but did her best, started blowing air into my mouth, trying to help me breathe, even though neither of us really knew what we were doing. I had a brief moment of clarity after that, where I felt okay-ish, until it hit me again, harder. That second wave of panic had me confessing everything. I told my mom about the brownie, told my whole family I loved them, and thanked them for everything they'd ever done. It was like this emotional purge I couldn't stop. They rushed me to a doctor, who gave me an injection. I don't even know what it was, but within a few hours, I was totally fine again. Physically, at least. Mentally, I felt ridiculous, but also kind of relieved. For a little while afterward, things with my family were really open and warm. We talked more. I felt closer to them. But eventually, we drifted back into our usual, we don't really share feelings mode. Still, I think that moment stuck with all of us a bit more than we let on. Story 22. I was in a pretty horrific car accident when I was 21. We're talking full facial fractures, a broken jaw, a cracked forehead, a shattered eye socket, and even brain damage. The doctors didn't sugarcoat it either. I wasn't going to make it, or I'd survive, but with major impairments for the rest of my life. They put me in a medically induced coma, and when I finally woke up 10 days later, everything had changed. Not just physically, but mentally too. I realized just how much time I had wasted being afraid to live fully. At 21, I had barely done anything outside the safe and comfortable path because I was always worried about the future. And suddenly, it hit me, I almost didn't get to have one. The recovery took years. For the first 7, I genuinely believed my time was still ticking down, like I had been granted a short extension. So, I lived like the clock was running out. I took massive financial risks, stuff I'd never have considered before, because in my mind I was like, screw it, I'll probably die soon anyway. Now I'm 44. Still here. And honestly, I look back and laugh at how convinced I was that the end was just around the corner. I made a lot of impulsive decisions, but I also lived way more boldly than I ever had before the accident. It completely rewired how I view time, fear, and risk. Story 23. This actually happened to my best friend, and it scared the life out of me. They had this horrible cough that had been going on for a few days, and it got worse really fast. Like by day 2 or 3, they were coughing up blood constantly, throwing up, and just overall sounding like their body was giving up. They had ordered some kind of intense medical equipment they thought would help, but it wasn't going to arrive for another week, and they genuinely didn't think they'd make it that long. Then I got the message. It was this long, emotional text where they basically said stuff like, "You made my life worth something," and, "Even if I'm gone, our bond will still be strong." I barely got a third of the way through it before full panic hit. I immediately started calling and texting nonstop, totally freaking out. I thought they were dying right then. Thankfully, a couple of days later, the medical gear arrived, and it actually worked. They got better. Like, completely fine now. But that message burned into my memory. For a moment there, I thought I was losing one of the most important people in my life. Story 24. When I was 17, I had a serious head injury, lots of blood loss, and while waiting for the ambulance, I started blacking out. I genuinely thought I might not make it. In that weird moment of panic and clarity, I blurted out to my parents that I'd actually hated them for the past 6 years. Not just anger, full-on resentment. I told them I had wished bad things on them, and all of it just poured out before I lost consciousness. I survived, obviously, and 5 years later, we've never really talked about it again. We sort of have this unspoken truce. I keep things civil until I graduate college, they act like they never heard what I said, and I don't stir the pot with extended family. They don't treat me differently, and I keep my real feelings to myself. Not exactly closure, but it works for now. Story 25. Not sure how much this counts, but a few days ago, I found a lump on my inner thigh. As a teen with limited medical knowledge, my mind immediately jumped to cancer. I panicked for a few minutes, thinking the worst, before calming myself down. In that brief window of spiraling, I genuinely thought I might not have much time left. It was weird. I started seeing everything from a different lens. Like, none of this really matters in the grand scheme of things, because we're all going to die someday. But that doesn't mean life isn't worth living. It actually felt like a sobering reminder that life is short and fragile, and it's okay to acknowledge that sometimes. It also made me think about how insignificant we are in the bigger picture. We often walk around thinking we're these one-in-a-million cases who somehow have more to offer the world before we go. But that's just our ego talking. People die every day. We don't get special treatment just because we're self-aware of it. That little moment of panic gave me a crash course in memento mori, being mindful of death. It's not a negative mindset, more like a reality check. And just to end on a lighter note, if you're a guy, lumps like this are actually pretty common. They're often just fatty deposits or cysts that are totally harmless. I've since learned that it's nothing serious, but I'm still planning to get it checked when I can, just in case. Story 26. It was a Saturday afternoon, and I had made up my mind that I didn't want to be here anymore. I didn't outright tell anyone, but I did what felt like my own version of a goodbye. I ran as fast as I could to a nearby park, hoping to find some peace and solitude. Before leaving, I sent a few subtle, quiet messages to some friends, just enough so that if they were paying attention, they'd realize something was wrong. The only public thing I posted was a simple line. Love y'all. Be good to each other. That was all I wanted to leave behind, a small piece of me out there one last time. The park was more crowded than I expected, and the beautiful day made it impossible to find the quiet I was searching for. But the bigger surprise was that some of my friends noticed the tone of what I'd done. They immediately reached out, calling, texting, and messaging, and they talked me down, just by being there. Their ability to read between the lines and sense what I was going through saved me. I know it's not the dramatic, tearful deathbed confession many might expect, but in a way, that simple post and those few messages were my confession. I don't have any big secrets or regrets, just a hope that people would be kind to each other. I didn't go through with it. And looking back now, I'm incredibly grateful. Story 27. When I was around 13, I got really sick from food poisoning, which turned out to be botulism, which is pretty serious and can be deadly. I remember my mom was driving me to the hospital as the symptoms started hitting me hard. I was completely convinced that I wasn't going to make it. It wasn't exactly a confession, but I couldn't stop thinking about how devastated my mom would be if I died. I kept apologizing over and over, telling her it was my fault she'd have to suffer through losing me. I kept replaying in my head how the pickled fish I ate didn't taste right, and why I even ate it. The worst part was that it was my mom who had given it to me and encouraged me to eat it. She doesn't even eat fish herself, so she had no way of knowing it was spoiled. I can't even imagine how she would have coped if I actually had died that day. The guilt and grief would have been unbearable, not just for her, but for my dad too. Botulism has a relatively high mortality rate, so it wasn't an irrational fear. Luckily, I got to the hospital in time and received treatment. I pulled through, and while the whole experience was terrifying, it really made me realize how much my family means to me. It also showed me how fragile life can be, and how important it is to appreciate the people around you while you still can. Story 28. This one's a bit wild, and honestly still confusing to me. So, my friend was seriously ill and near the end of his life. While I was out of the room one day, he told my then wife that I was having an affair with another woman. The thing is, I wasn't. Not even close. The strange part is that she never mentioned this to me or anyone else while he was alive. It was only after he had passed away that she finally brought it up. I'm not sure if it was some sort of twisted joke from him, he was always a prankster, or if his illness, he had brain cancer, somehow affected his mind and made him say things that weren't true. There's also a chance she was just trying to mess with me for reasons I don't fully understand. To this day, I have no idea what really happened or why he said what he did. Was it a cruel joke? A symptom of his illness? Or something else entirely? I guess I'll never know. Story 29. Back in 2019, I hit a really low point and ended up attempting to off myself. Before I went through with it, I sent out a few messages to some of my closest friends. I took the chance to thank them for being good friends over the years. I also apologized for being pretentious during middle school, a phase I'm not proud of, but wanted to acknowledge. None of them knew what was really going on at the time, but looking back, those messages felt like my way of saying goodbye or clearing the air. What surprised me most was that after everything, our relationships actually improved. Maybe it made them realize how much they mattered to me, or maybe it opened up space for more honest conversations between us. I didn't end up going through with it, and I'm glad I didn't. Story 30. It wasn't exactly a deathbed confession. In fact, it was almost the opposite. My mom spent the last 15 to 20 years of her life building up a carefully curated, fictional version of her past. To anyone outside our family, neighbors, church members, and co-workers, she was a saint. She painted herself as someone endlessly kind and patient, someone who had overcome hardship with grace. Meanwhile, the truth at home was much messier and far more painful. Our relationship had been strained for years, but when she got sick, I still stepped up to help her. I didn't want her to be alone in her final days, so I stayed with her in her room for an entire week. That time was complicated, to say the least. Even near the end, she was still trying to control the narrative. She timed her final calls to her sister, whom we hadn't spoken to in decades, and even to her attorney, deliberately trying to avoid any revelations until after she passed, like she wanted to win by keeping up appearances one last time. I didn't learn the full extent of what she had been saying to people until after her death, but even in those final days, I caught glimpses of it. I overheard her encouraging her sister, when she could barely speak, to send me harassing texts. I eventually confronted her about it and cleared things up with her sister directly, but it left a sour taste in my mouth. Her co-workers came in, full of admiration, calling her a saint and raving about how sweet and patient she'd always been. One of her supervisors came in and introduced herself to me. I recognized her name immediately. My mom had always spoken of her with bitterness and anger. But in that moment, I realized why. Her boss had seen through the act. That's probably why my mom disliked her so much. For a long time, I carried the emotional weight of who she really was because publicly, everyone had been fooled. It felt like no one knew the real version of the person I'd grown up with. When she passed, I didn't feel relief so much as release. I'd already mourned the mother I wished I had. The one the world thought she never really existed, except in stories she told others. Story 31. A few years ago, I had a near-death experience from what was either a severe asthma attack or an allergic reaction. We still don't really know for sure. All I remember is suddenly waking up and realizing I couldn't breathe. My mom was crying and screaming for help on the phone, and I genuinely thought that was going to be it. The next thing I knew, I was in the ambulance with my mom still crying next to me and a paramedic on the other side frantically trying to find a hospital that could take me in. The weirdest part is that the cause was never officially identified. That day, I had eaten some glazed peanuts, so my mom thinks I had a delayed allergic reaction to those. But the paramedics said that would have been too late for the timing to make sense. The doctors leaned more toward an asthma attack, but then we found black mold behind my bed, not just a little, but a solid patch. So now, I'm pretty convinced it was the mold that triggered it. Story 32. This isn't my story exactly, but it's about my ex's grandma's best friend, and it's one that really stuck with me. So, this woman was given a prognosis of just about 2 weeks to live. She had been holding in a lot for years, grudges, feelings about friends and family she'd never really said out loud. But once she found out she was facing the end, she finally let it all out. She expressed all the frustrations and disappointments she'd kept bottled up for so long. Alongside that, she gave away almost all of her possessions, including her beloved prize-winning cat, something she'd treasured deeply for years. But then, something unexpected happened. About 10 days later, she made what doctors called a miraculous turnaround. She ended up living for another couple of years, longer than anyone expected. Those extra years were complicated. She spent much of that time estranged from the people she'd confronted and gone off on, but she stayed close with those she truly loved. She often said that she wished she had been honest with everyone much earlier in her life, that maybe things would have been different if she hadn't held so much inside for so long. As for the cat, well, I don't actually know if she ever got it back. Story 33. A friend of mine was in the ICU after being in a coma for almost 2 weeks. He was hooked up to around 8 different IVs and monitors. Ironically, He might have survived sooner if the hospital hadn't accidentally given him a staph infection in his blood. His family actually ended up receiving a settlement over that. But that's another story. Anyway, while he was fully aware that he probably wasn't going home, he asked to see a reverend to make a confession. When the clergy showed up, my friend asked for a very specific minister by name, someone who wasn't around anymore because there were serious accusations made against him during his time in the ministry. Apparently, that minister had fled and gone off the grid. My friend looked at the reverend, then back at me, and said that the missing minister was behind the power station on the state line, in the swamp, maybe 100 yards into the trees. The reverend asked if my friend wanted absolution, and instead, he basically flipped him off and told him to leave. From that moment, it was clear that my friend was dropping a heavy accusation, that this missing minister was dead and buried out in that swamp. My friend survived, but that confession lingered with us all. Story 34. A while back, I had to get my wisdom teeth removed. Now, dental visits have never been my thing. I've always been terrible at handling them, like I panic way more than most people. Because of that, my dentist decided to put me under general anesthesia for the procedure, which felt like a relief at first. But before the surgery, I was convinced something was going to go wrong. Maybe it was anxiety, maybe paranoia, but I wrote a 7-page letter and left it under my keyboard. I figured if something happened and I didn't wake up, someone would find it. It was a mix of a letter to my loved ones and some random thoughts I wanted to get out. After the surgery, I came home feeling totally out of it. I won't lie, I was pretty high and not exactly myself. I ended up burning the letter because, well, I was relieved to be alive and didn't want to dwell on those dark thoughts anymore. But that third day after getting my wisdom teeth out was absolutely brutal. The pain, the swelling, the feeling like I was trapped in my own head, it was the worst. But I survived, and honestly, it made me realize how much our fears can sometimes trick us into preparing for the worst when really, we just need to hold on a little longer. Thank you for watching. If you enjoyed this video, be sure to give it a thumbs up, subscribe, and hit the bell icon so you never miss an update.
Offer valid on standard browsers, US only.
When I heard about Date My Age, I thought, really? But there I was in my empty, quiet house, my laptop on the kitchen counter, and I typed in my name. Looking for a man between the ages of 40 to 60? Sure, why not?
Date My Age is different. With verified profiles, you can feel safe and secure to explore meaningful connections with interesting and mature singles.
Date My Age made it really easy. I could join and view online profiles for free. All of a sudden, my empty house wasn't so quiet anymore. I got so much attention, it just made me feel seen and alive. Date My Age helped me start a totally new chapter in my life.
Find a friend, a lover, a partner at Date My Age. Get 60% off when you join at datemyage.com today. That's datemyage.com to connect with thousands of singles worldwide. datemyage.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.